You're listening to the New Old Heads podcast, shot live every Tuesday at twitch.tv/newoldheads and released every Thursday at noon via bringingdowntheband.com. The show is brought to you by Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl. Support the show directly by becoming a member at patreon.com/newoldheads.
You are now tuned into the New Old Heads podcast. I am Major Seven. We have formed like Voltron. We are back to full strength. My man Jay Moore, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, kind of defrosting here, you know, It's that Midwest winter thing, but, you know, we should all be used to it by this point.
We are, indeed. Live and in the flesh, my man Longevity. Hey, buddy.
Hi, man.
How are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm alive.
Good to see I'm you, alive. Man.
Yeah, thanks. Good to see you guys, too.
We missed your presence.
Did you?
Yeah.
Not super convincing, but yeah, that's all good, man.
Good to see you, man.
I think
sort of, whatever,
kind of. Yeah, you know, good to see you, my brother. Good to see you in the flesh, fam.
Yeah, man. Keep my stuff together.
Keep it together, man. You know, the more we age, the more we got to keep our stuff together. So keep it together, bro.
Yeah.
My man DJ J Dib, what's happening, man?
Salutations.
You good?
Yes, sir, man. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I can't complain. Same old, same old.
All right.
You know, just trying to avoid stay warm, like Jay Moore said, because we in that Midwest cold, so.
Yeah, we got a pump fake today. It was supposed to be like a ice storm, so to speak.
Yeah, they had people at the grocery store acting up.
Acting a fool.
And it was actually warmer than every day it was last week.
Yeah.
And all the snow is gone now.
It's definitely melted. Outside,
so. Yeah. You know how people, they go and, all right, let me get some eggs and some milk. I was like,
what is that about, man? Like, every time something happens, people feel like they ought to have milk and eggs and bread. Like, but you don't even eat that stuff
right
on a regular day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
And eggs do go bad, by the way.
Yeah.
And milk does as well.
Yeah.
Bread does as well. Maybe you should buy, like, soup.
Soup. My thing is like
soup will sit for a while.
The COVID scare.
Oh,
I was stocking up on canned goods, so I was buying a lot of vegetables and beans and stuff like that. My wife would be like, "Why are you buying so many beans?" Because like, I mean, beans don't go bad like that. Yeah. If I need some beans
in the clutch, beans that's gonna hold us
I'm
down.
Telling you,
definitely gonna hold
I might
you
need
down.
Some chili or something. So hey, we got it, and some noodles.
Yeah,
I can put together a few different meals from just beans and noodles.
I remember this seems long ago, but it's really not that, what I call that tumbleweed phase of COVID, where you go outside and it's like there's nobody outside and it might be two people in the store. And I remember seeing just the shelves just gone, like all the people buying a whole bunch of stuff for toilet paper and all that. You couldn't even find it.
Couldn't get no certain lunch meat.
Bro, you couldn't get
frozen pizzas.
Yeah, man.
Any frozen type potatoes, it was a wrap.
I remember standing at the gas station being shook, like, I gotta have something on to touch the gas pump. I gotta have this on to touch this.
And I'm still
running back into the crib, and I wash my hands when I come in the house, but back then it was, you know, you want to make sure you didn't bring anything in the crib and all that type of stuff. Man, that was crazy, bro.
Scary hours.
There was one, it was must have been right before everything shut down. I was at the grocery store when the bread truck showed up.
Oh,
man. And so I was like, all right, let me get some bread. And then I was like, I don't need all this bread, and I brought some over here.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I figured Lon might need some bread. You know what I'm saying? We got to look out for each other like that,
man. It was weird. It was a weird time. I was lucky because I was actually in the grocery stores.
Yeah.
So I could get my Lysol and all that stuff right up front before anybody came through the doors.
Rubbing alcohol, couldn't find it. Lysol, couldn't find it. Sanitizer, really couldn't find it. Let's talk Gangsta Gibbs and Madlib.
Okay.
Right? 10th anniversary of Piñata, album that I would say across the board we all thought was dope. Is that
classic.
Fair to say?
Yeah.
Classic project. So they're going on a tour, anniversary tour. I can't believe it's been this long.
It don't seem like it's been
that doesn't
years.
Seem like that at all. But it got me thinking because I remember looking at this combination as something that was unlikely. I didn't see this. I knew Gibbs could rap. We all knew that. I knew he was nice. I knew he was versatile. Knew all of that. But when they said he was going to come out with a project with Madlib, it threw me for a loop. I did not see that coming.
Did you even know who Madlib was before that?
I definitely did.
Sure?
Come on now. Don't do this.
I'm not doing this. I'm actually
don't
legit.
Don't do this.
The reason why I say this is because you're not an underground head.
Yeah, but I'm not a deep underground head, but I know Madlib been nice for a long time.
What else has Madlib done, like, in the realm of, like, Freddie Gibbs, besides Freddie Gibbs before, though?
That's what made
it different.
Doom, and you weren't.
I was not on that.
That's what I mean. And like a bunch of underground stuff and Loot Pack. But that's why I was curious if you actually were actually hip.
Now,
to
I'm not
Mad
gonna
Lib
say
like
I'm
that.
Not gonna say I was the biggest.
I'm not saying you didn't know the name Madlib. I'm saying being hip to Madlib like that. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like now, I can attest to not being a big Doom fan.
I'm not.
That I was hip. I was hip to Madlib though.
100%.
I was. This is the blog era, though. So.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but in general, most people before... Look, Freddie Gibbs, as much as Gibbs... It's why that combination, I think this goes to your point of this talk.
Mm-hmm.
They were from kind of different areas.
Yep.
You know, like mm-hmm. Madlib was super underground, instrumental, beat conductor, Quasimodo, mm-hmm. Doom, Stone's Throw, in the basement,
Champion
never leaving.
Sound.
Yep.
Never leaving the basement, just making beats on his iPad type thing. And Gibbs is over here doing all this other stuff.
You was signed to Jeezy.
Exactly. You know, and all this other. So
yeah, you worked on his first project.
Well, he
worked on your
he
project.
He worked on mine, yeah.
Yeah. So, but.
That's why it threw me off. That's why I wanted to ask, because are there any other examples of those unlikely combinations that were executed with?
Well, there's the obvious one, right?
What's that?
Run the Jewels.
There we go. I'll take that.
I thought, because I remember when I saw that combination, I was like, you didn't do from Fun Custer Plus. He's going to do, you know what I'm saying?
A project with Killer Mike.
Yeah.
The Def Jux guy.
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, okay.
After hearing rap music, though, that's what sold it for me.
Yeah.
Because
see,
he was very instrumental in the production of rap music. So I was like, okay.
This might work.
And then when it happened, it was like, damn, this is hard. Yeah. Because I can honestly say, to me, as a group, everything is good. But that first one was cold-blooded to me.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? When that first one came out.
If you had to take a pick.
If I had to take a pick, that first one is silly.
I think, not to take anything away from all their projects, but I think their projects are kind of like this.
Yeah.
It's like 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like the first one's was definitely mm-hmm. the best.
With rap music being
rap music
the
was
top.
Fire.
Yeah. And then the first Run of Jewels kind of being linear with rap music.
Yeah.
And then it kind of.
Just slowly.
It's gradual, right?
Yeah, it's not like. It's not like there's
a huge drop off that makes it to where the music is not enjoyable.
There's nothing that. I don't think they've had a bad release. It was that first one was just so.
Yeah, the first one was amazing. So hard headed that. Man, come on now.
Yeah.
But even with rap music was one of those records. Shout out to my man, Bad Andy. I ran into him at a Walgreens mm-hmm. downtown. And he just gave me his copy. He's like, you have to hear this. And I was like, okay. You know, I don't think I ever gave it back to him either. It is what it is. But
just throw it on yourself.
Yeah. But definitely. At the same time, like, you know, it's one of those things that, like, if you shared it with somebody, like, it meant that this was something special. Mm-hmm. And so it flourished into Run the Jewels. I don't know if that was the inspiration. You know,
kind of feels like it was.
You know, for it was like, okay, let me step out for people to say, let me step out of what I usually do. You know, because I wouldn't, when I saw Freddie Gibbs and Madlib, I'm like,
I swear to you, I was like, we going to see. I had confidence, but I'm like, I need to hear this and see what this is going to sound like.
A fan of Madlib, and I'm, you know, I'm a fan of Freddie Gibbs too. Like, you know, I remember seeing him at the Jazz Kitchen and he had to tell all the people in there that you can't smoke in here.
Yeah.
He had 90 people on stage with him.
Exactly. So it was just a situation where I was like, okay, I don't know. Let's see if this peanut butter goes with the chocolate. It doesn't always work.
Yeah, I think they're both of those two examples are probably the best examples of two worlds kind of colliding and just working, because Madlib.
Or like CeeLo and
Danger Mouse. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Saint Elsewhere.
Not as much.
CeeLo wasn't really rapping on any of those releases, but I mean, CeeLo is a rapper.
It worked.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. That definitely worked. And that was. No, I think that one is another.
I think that's a good one.
Those are three really good ones.
Yeah.
Because all three of those producers come from very interesting backgrounds that don't make sense, but like the Def Jux background.
More eclectic
for LP,
backgrounds.
Yeah, Madlib's super eclectic background. Sure, he did J-Lib with Dilla, right? Which we all knew, obviously. I know you know some stuff.
Come on.
But outside of some stuff, weren't hip to like his beat conductor catalogs and stuff.
No, I was
like
not.
That.
I'm not going
to
cap.
You know, so, and I wasn't trying to call you out. I was just curious.
No, you could.
But it's the same with LP, you know, like the people that knew Killer Mike probably weren't super hip to Def Jux and Aesop Rock. And
I guarantee you they weren't.
You know what I mean? Like in Cannibal Ox and C-Ray's Waltz, you know? Yeah, for sure. So it was a perfect colliding of two worlds.
I had to do my homework on Danger Mouse. I had to go back.
He did the White Album.
The Gray album.
Yeah, I had heard about the Gray,
whatever it's called.
I had heard about the Gray album with the Beatles. I think that was the Beatles.
The Beatles. The Beatles mashed up right? Jay-Z and in the Beatles.
So I heard about that,
which I wasn't impressed with.
I didn't even like it.
It was basic as F.
I thought it was cool.
I thought it was cool. Other than what more can I say? But I had like every remix album. Listen, Kev Brown did the Brown album. That was excellent.
He did the Spectrum album.
Yeah, I got a version. Let y'all hear that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to hear that, man.
DJ Needles did the Jacked album.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what's weird about this whole situation.
It was the Beatles.
Is that what it was?
It got white people interested.
But it was on, you had to buy it off of, what was that site back in the day? SOHH?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember seeing it in the record store.
Was it at the record store?
I saw it at Vintage Vinyl in St. Louis.
Well, I ordered mine online, and when I got it, I was like, this ain't that.
I was like, this is not even tracked out. Like, yeah. I remember me and James Biko, formerly known as DJ Needles, we were like, we don't know what everybody's talking about.
Mm-hmm. I remember buying that. I bought that and a 50 Cent mixtape at the same time.
Power of the Dollar.
Think that might have been.
No. That was actually on Columbia.
It was before.
It was like 50 Cent is the Future.
Yeah, that's what it was.
50 Cent is the Future.
Yeah.
I remember.
That mug was hidden.
It, man.
Yeah.
There was a buzz about that Beatles mashup, though. Yeah. I remember hearing Once about again, that everywhere.
Look, the buzz was crazy, and I remember hearing it being like, oh, I can almost do this.
Yeah. And some of the stuff wasn't even matching up right.
No, it was. It was not.
That's why I was like, it's cool.
No. I was like, I could have done better than this with my cracked version of Kool-Aid Pro.
I got his. I literally have the Spectrum album right here.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I think I did the cover for that.
You may have, man. I can't even remember. I just got lucky and found some acapellas. But
it's just crazy how.
Because Ninth Wonder did
it, too. Do you even have a copy of your own remix album?
It's probably in a trunk somewhere at my mama's house on CD in a case that's got watermarks on it.
Brookins is like, I don't have a copy of my American Gangster remix album.
I got it somewhere. Man.
And I was like, you need to put that back out. But he's like, I don't even have it. But
I got it somewhere.
I couldn't even be mad because I don't have any of my mixtapes.
I actually might have it on an iPod. But
that's how I got a copy. You know what? I need to see if Stacia still has it. She has all my stuff on an iPod somewhere.
I don't know. I have an iPod still, but I don't know the passcode to get into it.
Oh, damn.
Kids, keep your stuff. If you have it, set it somewhere in a safe deposit box or tell your mama keep it or do something.
Because, you know, think about it. How many computers have you had since you did those?
Oh, my God, man.
I did it on an old desktop.
I'm a cataloger, so I have a lot of
stuff. Have probably the most in order catalog that
I've ever seen in my life.
It's like tracked out alphabetically.
Yeah, it is.
It's wild.
He's the one person that I personally have confidence in that can say, if I ask him where something is on his drive, he's going to go find it real quick.
I still have the CD that we recorded in the band room.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. Look, we all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Oh, when we was playing around with the equipment.
The very first time that I rapped.
Yes.
That?
Yep.
Still
our,
got it.
Our band director had
horrible.
He had a 8-track mixer or something like that. And we just ran into two mics and was just like,
is it? Not even Pro Tools. Like it
was, we did this on.
Have either of you ever worked on Pro Tools?
Yeah, I used to.
Okay,
but we're getting too sidetracked.
Yeah,
so. but back to the part about the unlikely. I think those are the three best ones you can come up with, unless I'm tripping. Unless somebody want to put it in the chat if we miss.
You know, Czarface is interesting too.
That's
SL and Esoteric, and then Inspectadeck.
Snoop and Dame Funk.
That one, yeah.
Well, though, they were kind of similar.
But they weren't really a group, though.
Nah.
I mean, it's just like a one album thing. But Czarface is literally like a group.
Yeah.
I can't, I'm telling you, man. I got Freddie. I would put he and Madlib battling Run the Jewels. And then you got, obviously, Gnarls Barkley. I would put them after that. But
did you like their second album, Gnarls Barkley's?
I don't even remember it.
Yeah, I didn't.
I liked it. It's not as good as the first one. But it's kind of like what you were talking about with the trajectory. Kind of like that. But
like, I remember coming out. I listened to it. I know what you're talking about. But I was just like, at the time.
What was it called? No, the first one was The Odd Couple, right?
I think the second one is.
Or was it the second one?
No, the first one was.
Saint Elsewhere.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. The second one was The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
And then I thought they were working on Saint Elsewhere 2 or something. I could be wrong.
But no, I think those are the elite ones. I don't think we missed anything. Like I said, if anybody wants to correct us, or
Trick Daddy's doing a joint with DJ Premier whole album.
Well, yeah. That would be up there as well.
It would.
Post Malone and Ninth Wonder.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna mention Tyler the Creator and
Drama,
but Drama didn't really do anything. But like
yell,
talk.
Yeah, that's it. He didn't really produce nothing. But they're not likely. Counterpart, so to speak, you know what I'm saying?
Freddie and Alchemist. That's what Mighty J Young said.
Yeah, but the Freddie and Madlib already existed. It kind of broke the ground for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
plus the Madlib stuff is better.
I think Alchemist
kind of works with those type artists.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't seem as much of a stretch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Madlib was working with like straight backpackers and dooms. You know what I mean?
And yeah. Like, I think you made a good point with who Freddie Gibbs was at the time, being associated, coming off the Jeezy stuff and all that. So
he made the switch, you know.
Yeah.
He kind of made it easier for transition into a Madlib.
Because he never even dropped anything with Jeezy. He was just signed to him.
Yeah.
And then nothing came out. I know he was in one of Jeezy's videos, but like no music came out when he was on.
CTE.
Yeah, corporate. Yeah.
I had heard.
That's a terrible name for, you know, now that you think about it.
Yeah, hindsight.
I had already heard like Gibbs on production similar to Madlib's already, though. Because he would be all over the place. So I would say that I was less surprised with the Madlib than I would be a Killer Mike in LP.
In LP.
I think that's still. That's probably trumps everything to me.
Mike in LP.
Yeah.
I will say this. To your point about Gibbs, from a versatility standpoint, I remember when he did he rapped over the Milkbone beat for, they shot a video out at the, what's the name of the theater? Regal, I think, out south. Anyway, he had played me some joints where, to your point, it's a little bit closer to that. It wasn't quite there, but it just didn't make sense to me because of how it sounded. It's like Freddie Gibbs and Madlib. I'm like, what is this going to sound like? So it still kind of shocked me, but I see your point because the versatility in him maybe takes the shock away a little bit. So,
and also it being the blog era.
Yeah.
Gibbs was collaborating with a lot of rappers that would work with like Madlib.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So it was kind of like when it happened, it was like, oh, most likely. And I'm sure that's probably the case. I'm guessing that he probably got introduced through an artist that knew him and they probably did a record and he's like, okay, let's do a bunch of them, you know, or something like that, especially knowing Madlib. But
Mighty J Young is on his game. Cold Day in Hell is a crazy mixtape by Freddie Gibbs.
Yeah. I think that was an LRG mixtape.
Yeah. Yeah. He got a joint with Freeway on there too.
That's just crazy.
You know what could have been a wild situation, since we're talking about unlikely counterparts and pairings, is if Danny Brown actually got with 50 Cent and G-Unit. Because there was talks of him actually signing with G-Unit. So that would have been very interesting to see
how
G-Unit production would have sounded behind Danny Brown raps. You know what I'm saying?
That's different.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, with G-Unit, they were so hot at the time that they weren't even using... I mean, of course, they had Dr. Dre behind them on certain things, but they weren't even using
Super Havoc too.
Havoc, but they didn't. There were certain songs they had that didn't even have big name producers on them.
Yeah, but like, they sounded good.
But you could tell someone was in there.
It's probably because they were co-produced by High Tech or Denial. Yeah,
talk to them long.
Somebody was in there making sure those songs were mixed extremely well. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you got to think about, like, On Fire was mixed by, you know, he was called K1 Millions at the time, but it was Kwame.
Oh, really?
Who wasn't. people weren't checking for Kwame as a producer at the time, mm-hmm. but like they heard that beat and were like, let's go.
Mm-hmm. That was actually a solid song.
Yeah.
You know, a interesting combination that I wouldn't say is necessarily not surprising or anything, but Random Acts with Guilty Simpson, Black Milk, and Sean Price.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would have expected those three to get together, but when they did, it was almost like a perfect marriage.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not that hip on that one.
Really?
Heard the name, heard the the mix, but
Guilty was like, it's a dumb way to compare. I just don't have another way, but he's almost like the Detroit version of Sean Price.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So
okay,
it was kind of like,
I've heard of him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he's on the...
he's on a lot of Dilla stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So Guilty Simpson's dope.
And a posse don't make you hard. He said, "What he started starts one of his raps. He said, I go to the movie theater with my feet stick out. Anybody that talk crazy get their teeth chipped out." Like, that's a Sean Price bar.
Yeah, that's probably.
That's definitely Sean Price.
So like when they got together, I was just like, oh, this is perfect. Over Black Milk beats? Like, yes. Yeah. You know, so.
Very underrated producer. That boy got some heat. Let's talk Van Lathan, man. Y'all know Van, right?
Shout out to Van Lathan. You know, good content creator. I appreciate you, brother.
For sure, for sure. So he's been talking about rappers and their cultural responsibility to hip-hop media.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a passage here, and then we can kind of dive in and see what's what. So Van says, it is incumbent upon hip-hop artists.
Incumbent.
Incumbent.
Oh, you using them.
Upon hip-hop.
He using them $100 words.
Yeah, $100. Yeah,
right. You can use those words when you're on CNN. Yeah.
100%. Incumbent upon hip-hop artists.
You're thinking of other Van. This is Van Lathan. Well, you're thinking of Van Jones.
Been on CNN a couple times.
Oh, yes. Okay. Sure. Okay. I don't want to take nothing away from Van.
You trying to front
on Van Lathan?
Yeah, let the brother shine, man. Look,
he's always getting clowned on.
I enjoy Van Lathan a lot more than I enjoy Van Jones. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Jay Moore, let that man cook. He's been on there a couple times.
He got an Oscar. He's doing it. I get it.
Disrespect the brother.
No disrespect on this end.
All right. So
he holds his own.
For sure. Mm-hmm. But he says, it is incumbent upon hip-hop artists to do interviews with hip-hop media because that feeds the ecosystem. They have to do hip-hop media. He says, I'm telling you, if you are a rap artist, you are a big rap artist, you have to do traditional hip-hop media. You have to do it at all time. And then he says, there's a cultural responsibility to invest back into media. And number two, they feed the ecosystem of hip-hop because the people like Bobby Althoff, is that how you said?
The white girl.
That has the podcast. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
he's like, they're going to eat off hip-hop regardless. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of saying that the artists do have a responsibility. Now, we've talked about artists' responsibility from a media standpoint on things they shouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a conversation that's different from the outlets that they go to. What do you think about this comment when he says it feeds the ecosystem and rappers should, stop by the hip-hop media stops?
And we talked about this a little bit.
We did.
Before. Because Andre. Where Jay-Z sat out and talked to Gail. But, you know, he sat out and talked to Elliot before. So
true.
You know, I was like, okay, yeah, he's doing something big. Wasn't even particularly about his music or a new album coming out.
Yeah.
I want to see Elliot get mad when they don't come and sit and talk to us.
Yeah, say that.
Okay.
Say that.
Yeah. You know, don't get me wrong.
He's mad when they don't come talk to him.
Elliot is going to get his guests. Noriega.
He's going to get his guests.
Whatever you feel about Drink Champs, and I've told you how I feel about Drink Champs, they're going to get, because Grandmaster Flash is on the next episode.
Hey, that's
word.
Dope.
Yeah.
That's dope.
You know, and I'm excited. Like, for episodes like that, I'm excited.
Yeah, I actually watched that one. Hope you let him talk.
Well, yeah, that's my criticism. It's hard, man, because you got to understand certain artists have a different kind of rollout. Okay. And maybe they're rollout. You know, when you Andre talking about this Flute album, I don't want to hear Noriega talk to him about this Flute album. I just really don't.
Nah, I feel you.
No, because the questions are going to be so stupid.
It's going to be like, so what's with the flutes?
What's with the flutes?
You know,
did you ever play Legend of Zelda?
hold on.
Okinawa Times.
Yo, let me tell you how to get to level 5. You blow the flute. No, let me stop.
Take a shot.
Let's take a shot for Legend of Zelda.
Yay, Harambe.
No, but I'm just saying, yes.
Take a shot for Legend of Zelda.
I mean,
sorry, that's funny.
I think what Lone had to say, like, even if he was saying it in jest, I think it is very relevant. It's like, okay, yeah, really, don't just talk about hip-hop media when you're talking about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Or Hot 97.
Yeah.
Or
the corporate entities.
Yeah, these corporate entities. Like, you know, like talk about why if Fred, say something, they Freddie Gibbs, they're going on this tour and they sit down and only talk to, I don't know, some random white girl who has a bed.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we should feel some kind of way about that. But we should also feel some type of way when, you know, they might say one of their tour stops is in Indiana.
Mm.
And we as not the new old heads, but Bring Down the Band, we have no access to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should feel some kind of way about that. shout out to, and I'm not saying that they all do this, because shout out to Pharoah Monch, who sat down and talked to us.
He did. Mm-hmm.
You
gave us his time. He did.
Gave us his time. You know, didn't have to.
He
really could have got on stage, got his money, and bounced.
He did.
But able, you know, came and sat down on us. Same thing with Rob Swift from the Executioners. Yeah. And, you know,
Odyssey.
Yeah.
Odyssey.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot. People think of hip hop media as these four or five outlets. There's hip hop media in every single city.
Yeah. Hip hop 24 hour hip hop in Chicago, right?
Yeah. Yep. 24/7. Yep.
24/7 GQ.
Yep. Yeah.
Shout out to homie. I will say they do
advocate for everybody, just not when they don't come talk to you.
They do show Fake Short Drive a lot of love. Shout out to Andrew Barber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Chicago gets behind that outlet. That's pretty much the point, man, whenever anything happens here. I think that's really solid. I feel like more people or more cities, more states need to get behind who they know is the hip hop outlet and support them and ride out, because essentially that's what it needs.
And that
everybody needs to be on the same page, same accord.
That feeds this concept of what he's talking about with like the ecosystem concept. Like you said, if each city has that point person or the person that everybody knows is the correct person in that position, that only helps everybody.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Everybody can benefit from that.
Yeah, but in the same token, I feel like some artists are anomalies, and I think we talked about that the first time we kind of had this similar conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Certain artists don't have to sit down with a hip-hop personality, so to speak, especially if they don't have any, they don't really have any meat in the games, because a lot of people are new.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we're not new, you know, so we've been doing this for a while.
Right.
But like when we talk about the Bobby Althoff, she kind of got popping over the past year.
Right.
And I understand that being a slap in the face to hip hop journalists that have been putting in the work. And then all of a sudden, this little chick comes in with this stick and people are hopping on her wave. So
yeah, and she gets to sit down and talk to Drake.
Yeah, that's kind of foul at the end of the day.
I agree.
Then he doesn't want to come speak to other people, but Drake's he doesn't really have to talk to people, though.
Exactly.
And so
Jay's the same.
For him,
Andre's the same.
That's just creating content.
Yeah.
That he can use is different than what he's doing. I mean, he just dropped some whack ass hat that people were all up in arms about. Drake, about his alter ego called.
This is going to be really cool.
Man, the alter ego is crazy.
What is it called?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I probably don't care.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but the logo on the hat is trash and people are going to eat it up.
Yeah, I need to see what
people are going to eat it up. And it's like, I don't know, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as interviews go.
Yeah.
I kind of understand Van Lathan as far as people coming up in hip hop and maybe feeling themselves a little more than they should.
Right.
They definitely should be hitting these outlets.
Or it's a situation where, like, okay, say someone like Pharoah Monch, who has sat down and talked to us, or Odyssey. Say Odyssey catch one, and all of a sudden he becomes a darling, and he gets to the Grammy show, and all of a sudden they're talking about Odyssey and the new this, that, and third. And then, you know, when it comes back around time, you know, to get to Indianapolis, He doesn't talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that he owes us that.
Right.
But then all of a sudden he's got these handlers.
Yeah.
And these people are like, why would you talk to this group of guys when we can get you on over here? We could actually get you on
the Pat McAfee show.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good example.
Shout out to Pat McAfee.
Yeah. Yep.
We're still waiting.
Yeah.
We definitely are still waiting, Pat. We definitely.
But, you know, like that's the difference. You know, sometimes it's not even the artists, it's the people they got around them. You know, we talked about this a little bit before when we were talking about like how at a certain point, like in the '80s, like, you know, they would be like, okay, Whitney Houston, you're not going to Soul Train anymore. I don't remember if she ever went, but like they would say
she was there when Bobby Brown performed.
Well, I mean, that's different, but
before they were together,
but you know, you're talking about, you know, there were certain black outlets, you know, which would have been the YouTube channels or whatever at the time. I remember Michael Jackson. I'll give him this is Michael. This is where you got to give Mike props. When he was on his press run for Bad, he still sat down and talked to Ebony Jet Showcase. I do remember that. That was a big deal. Where other black artists probably wouldn't come around at that time. I mean, and it's hard to draw those parallels between like what was going on in the 80s and what's going on now, just because the media landscape is so different. You know, a lot of times, like, your handlers will tell you, you're too big to do that, so let's not go over there. Like, think about it. There are artists who come to town and don't even stop by the radio station anymore.
Oh, yeah. And that's just funny that you bring that up, because I thought the same thing. Like, back in the day, if an artist was new, they were touring the city, not necessarily even on tour performing, but at least talking on the radio in all of these different cities. Right. Whereas they would, now,
always, even before a show, they would be on the radio.
Yeah, all the time. True. But now, with it being social media out there, it kind of trumps everything. So I think people have kind of became complacent with thinking all I need to do is get on social media and say something. But a lot of people aren't on social media like that all day. A lot of people are. But if I'm listening to the radio and then you start speaking on the radio,
and this is talking about, this is where I'm going to be. Hey, you know, check out my new song. Look, I remember this is how the handlers. I have personal experience with this, because I remember there was Donnell Jones. Shout out to him. He had his new record, a song called You Know That I Love You. Mm. And his handlers from Arista Records had him across the hallway at the hip hop station. And I had to literally stop, you know, his record rep. And I said, I told her, we're actually playing his record. They're not playing the record over there. So can I get 10 minutes? Because they just felt like, oh, this station is bigger. They have higher ratings, whatever. We'll just go over there. And I'm like, they're not even playing. I had to be that guy and be like, they're not playing his new single.
Give him a raise.
We're playing. We got his song in heavy rotation over here. Can I get 10 minutes with Donnell Jones? I had to be that bold. That's when you're young and you don't know any better. Because sometimes just even your handlers don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. But, you know,
especially if they're new, you know, like, you know, sometimes those people change.
Talked about social media to the point about the radio station. Social media has watered down everything. There's the importance of the radio spot. You can do that on Instagram. Hey, y'all, I'm going to be performing that blah, blah, blah tonight. Check it out. That's the way the artist is being wired now. So now it's
because they would rather than going to each city and getting on the radio, they rather just get on Kaisenet and just speak that one time and hope that it goes viral.
Yep.
It's lazy.
It's laziness. So
it's numbers.
Yeah, I would say, look, if you're an artist out there, radio still had, like, you got to understand, if people are in their cars back and forth to work, you know, radio still has a real value to artists, especially new artists. So if you're a new artist and you're coming to these major markets like in Indianapolis, like St. Louis, like Kansas City, because you can make your money in the Midwest, what they used to call flyover country, if you're just willing to do the work and build a fan base here, as opposed to thinking everything comes out of L.A., New York, Miami, Dallas, or whatever, or Atlanta. Right. You see somebody like Boosie, of all people, he has an entire city, basically, because he doesn't ignore the cities that other artists feel like they, you know, he'll get on the radio.
He's been here for 20 years.
That's a good point. Yeah.
He's been one of those people that will cut out here and try to get next to the people. And he's not, say whatever you got to say about Boosie, you cannot say he's
lazy.
And he
signed somebody from the city.
There you go. You know, but I'm just saying that, like, there's been a lot of talk about gatekeepers in the last few weeks, whether it be Cat Williams or whatever. If you think they're gatekeepers, that's fine. But there are ways for you to go around that gate.
Yeah, there's people that know how to pick locks.
Yeah. A lot of people in the industry know how to pick locks.
I'm telling you.
You know, and you got to make sure that the people who you think are trying to handle you and have the best your best interest at heart, that they're not actually putting up roadblocks for you. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it comes to when you tell people that they're too big to sit down and talk with a certain, because you never know what that particular platform, you don't know what's going to be in 2 years or 6 months, the way things move.
Right.
And so, like, you say, oh, I don't have time to sit down and give them 10 to 20 minutes. Okay, that's cool. In 6 months, it's the biggest thing in the world. And then they don't have time for you.
And then you're going to be in your feelings.
So what's the verdict on this? Do we agree with Van Lathan or no?
I think it's a mixture. I don't think it's black and white. And I think there are artists that are a little big, and I think it's great when big artists do kind of take the time to do that. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I think in general, I think it helps everything when the artists do seek it out. Mm-hmm. I do think it genuinely probably does help hip hop culture and help hip hop grow in that aspect.
Balance in the force.
I do think it does, but I don't know if I would go as far as to say that I feel like anybody's necessarily obligated to. Yeah. But
it would be nice, but no,
it would
can't.
Be nice.
Nobody's obligated to do anything. Right.
Yeah,
I don't think other artists do this in other genres either, though.
I wonder how much of it has to do with the fact of it just being a black space. hip hop being a black space and mm-hmm. black artists going to black spaces instead of white spaces mm-hmm. in that aspect.
Like, once again, it comes down to handlers where, and I hate to pick on this kid again, but say when the baby was on top of the world, he could go on Kelly Clarkson yeah. and then go on to Drew Barrymore's show. Mm-hmm. And then he gets cold and they don't pick up the phone when he calls right. and wants to come by.
Hip hop cats.
And yeah. And then and it's like, oh, look, there's a very,
see, there's an old saying. Curse in that there's an old saying.
The same people you see up on going the way up are the same people you see on the way down.
Right. Because at the end of the day, it's a gift and a curse, because you may not have came and seen us when you were at your peak. But now if people want to hear what's going on with you, you come to see us now. Our viewership comes up then. I ain't necessarily mad. If you came to us at one point in time and your career skyrocketed and you kind of feel like you want to be on national TV now, I don't see anything wrong with that, so to speak. As long as you ain't fake
right.
whenever we meet, you know what I'm saying? For we're sure. in person, that type of thing. I don't see anything yeah, wrong with that.
That's I think where I'm kind of like, yeah, I get it to a degree, depending on who you are, because you want to see people win.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You want to see people continually grow and do great things. And if you're super right. busy and you don't have time to come by, then that means you're doing well for yourself mm-hmm. a lot of times.
As long as you're on front on the people to help.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Shout out to Van. I see your point. I see what you're shooting for, but it is important.
Just like anything else, it's a nuanced conversation.
100%. 100%.
Thanks to our partners. Dr. Coleman of Coleman Dental is our go-to dentist. He's a longtime Indianapolis arts and music supporter located right in Broad Ripple. Printfinity is a screen printing shop based in Indianapolis, owned and operated by our own DJ J Diff. Our good friends at Indy CD and Vinyl operate one of the best record stores in North America. Shop new and used in their site or visit them in person. And the best way to support the New Old Heads is to visit our Patreon and become a member for as little as $3 a month. All details on newoldheads.com.
Hi.
Howdy. Why are people so offended by the pop word? I know we talked about this last week.
I don't understand it. I've never understood it.
I think it's just because there's a certain level of cool being hip hop, I guess.
Then there's a stigma that says you sold out when you become pop. Yeah. Or not is even that, you sold out, but it's like your music isn't what it ain't. It ain't this. It ain't for the people if you got there.
It's not authentic.
Just like, but it, the same thing when a country music artist goes pop, sometimes people are just like, there are people from that musical genre who are like, eh, whatever.
I don't know, man.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I just feel like,
what you think, Lo?
No, I mean, we've gotten a lot of comments of people disagreeing about one, Eminem being pop and Drake being pop and all this stuff. And it's just like, are you guys like really that delusional?
You don't sell 10 million records if you're not pop.
Yeah, like, do you
pop
not?
Pop just means popular.
Yeah, that's like, all it means at the end of the day. That's why I'm kind of confused about it, because
yeah, it's weird,
if I'm
man.
An artist and I'm considered pop, it's kind of an honor.
It means you have reached a certain level of success that most people don't hit. But I think a lot of people look at it as just like, oh, they're a sell. Like you said, it's a sellout. Or
man,
you're cool in hip hop if you're in hip hop. But if you're in pop, you're not cool anymore. No. It's a lot of those people that aren't cool that try to fake to be
cool
anyway.
It's like when certain grunge artists started to sell a lot of records in that early 90s period where grunge was... It wasn't even underground anymore.
No, was Green Day considered grunge?
Yeah.
Y'all would know better than me.
They were kind of considered
grunge. They're more punk.
What was punk, was Blink-182 considered grunge?
I don't think so.
See, I don't,
that's what I'm saying. But I don't think...
No, I don't think so.
I feel like, well, who I'll actually listen to, Nirvana, that seems like the only grunge group, though. I know I'm wrong. Because,
Smashing Pumpkins. Because I wasn't Pearl hit. Jam.
Was that Soundgarden, grunge, though?
If you get into the stuff that hit before they got popping, if you will, you know, but then, of course, you got like,
That's a very good question.
Well, I mean, but at the same time, when we had that pop conversation at one point, like Pearl Jam sold like 12 million records.
I don't feel like Pearl Jam was grunge.
No. Yeah.
I'm so lost.
Were
right
they?
Now.
Yeah. Pearl Jam was grunge.
Man, that's a really good question, because I think maybe what is happening here, Terry, is that we are equating the extremeness of what we remember Nirvana's grunge to be, mm-hmm. and we can't find anybody that is as grunge.
Nobody
as
was.
That.
Nobody was Nirvana.
Nobody was as
day.
Grunge as that. Especially right. their very first video, where they're in that basement, and you know, like,
you remember Alice in Chains? Would you consider that grunge?
That's interesting, though. That is very interesting, because like alternative rock is what I would classify most of these as.
But thing is, there was alternative rock. Or college rock, and that's where you get into Violent Femmes, Jesus Jones, REM, maybe even they might be Giants. I know I'm losing some folks with this.
What are you talking about? I want to talk about this before we get out of here. It's relation to the concept of hip emotion. The term emotion as it relates to hip hop, right? Mm. Because Lone said something that stuck out to me last week. He's talking about the narrative of emotion, using the word emotion as it associated with hip hop. So, you know, Drake last week was kind of getting on Yasin. So there's an executive from Toronto, his rapper slash executive named Kofi Carmichael. He was on an interview for a podcast called We Love the Hip Hop Podcast. We Love Hip Hop Podcast. Make sure I quote him right. Basically, he was telling a story about Yasin being coked out at an event or something and marrying a chick that he met within 2 weeks when he was in Toronto or something. I'm paraphrasing because the story's too long. Basically saying dude was wilding out on some ecstasy trip or whatever. And Drake...
Back in 05.
Yes,
damn near 20 years ago.
Okay. And then Drake commented in saying that he was a bohemian bucket. The word bucket in Toronto is slang for crackhead. So this is Drake pretty much trying to call out who he was back then and all the crazy stuff in the story. So what made me think about that is there are people that would say Drake is being emotional by responding to this. Now, hip hop has always been competitive. You got battle rap.
Hip hop is toxic.
Hip hop is toxic. That's why I'm asking.
Britney Spears.
I see you. Mm. But what I'm asking is, Lone, I'm coming to you first because you hinted at this. You kind of dabbled at it a little bit.
I didn't hint at all.
Well, you said it last week in the comments, but I'm talking about you're here now.
Right.
And we're talking about the concept of responding to certain things. You don't believe in it being emotional when somebody responds to something that
relates
to them?
Everything is emotional. We all have emotions. We all are emotional.
They make you
all
cry sometimes.
All the times. They do. Terry said this 3 times now.
Yeah, they do. You said
but,
it.
But it's true. We're all emotional all the time. And when we allude to the fact that somebody is being emotional, it is a hip-hop toxic trait in our culture.
Because at the same time, we defend people being emotional. Like when we have the conversations about Scarface and his content being emotionally charged, being kind of on some mental health things. It's one of the first artists actually talking about mental health.
He was emotional on Tiny Desk.
That's emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with being emotional, so to speak.
But when it's Drake, we have to use it in a negative connotation. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Why I'm posing the question. I'm just here to pose the question to see how we decipher it, because you know how it can be looked at. The narrative is, oh, he's just being emotional. That's typically in hip-hop. That's the narrative.
That's human at the end of the day, honestly.
Yeah, I just think it's... I think it's tired.
Okay.
It's something that I see. I think, you know, not to be that super left wing dude, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's toxic masculinity is what it is.
Really. To point this out and call it
to call Drake emotional. It's like, all right, so you're going to question his masculinity because he acts, let's call it what he is being necessarily. He is being emotional. But everybody is being emotional all the time. We are responding in an emotional way. I'm responding in an emotional way right now because it's triggering to me, because it's disappointing to me that we have to call another man emotional when we're all emotional. Yeah. He's getting
emotional.
You know, I'll be emotional about it. So you can call me if you want.
Because it makes you cry sometimes.
Exactly. And if it makes me cry, then it's emotional. But if it makes me happy, it's emotional. And I think I think in general, me personally, and this is just my own personal evolution as a man.
Okay.
Right. I've gotten to the point to where like, that's just one of those things that I try to shy away from just because it's just something I just don't want to do.
Okay.
And I feel like it's like the steering of the conversation. Have you ever been around a dude that's been turned down by a woman? And then all of a sudden the dude goes like, well, you're ugly anyways. It's the same type of energy. It's like the same type of energy. And you know, I see what he's saying. I don't vouch for that, man.
I don't vouch for it.
And so, you know, that's, so when I hear somebody be like, oh, Drake's being emotional or you're just emotional. Yeah. What's your point?
Yeah. It's like, you just wanted to just go ahead and just take what Yasin said about him.
You're trying to reduce him as a man.
Right.
And that's where I don't
that's the part you're not rocking with.
At the end of the day, whether he responds like that or he drops a diss song,
uh-huh.
a diss song is emotions.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's just a more amped up mass, you know what I'm saying, brolic emotion.
I'll say this. One of the most toxic emotional expressions ever in hip hop is No Vaseline by Ice Cube.
Really?
Yes. You don't think that's
it's one of the best diss songs ever.
I'll say is, you know why the emotion comes into play? Because these are his friends. These are his friends. He felt like betrayed him, and you know, and dissed him. And when he did it, he wasn't even trying to diss them. He was just like, it was a business situation.
I remember
went wrong.
That.
And then all of a sudden, and say what you want, but you know, yes, No Vaseline is fire, but a lot of it is really a bunch of homosexual rants against against his former friends.
I mean,
and the people who are not even his former friends, people he fought with his friends, and like, just it came off in a bad way. And like, apparently, you know, everything's better now because they're men and they're grown up. But like, when you listen, like, go back and listen, it's vicious. It was dope, but at the same time, I listened to it. I was like, this is toxic emotion
to y'all point,
and a problem in certain ways. But that's just me as an adult.
To y'all, to the point that you all are making, I had to think about this. We talk about the emotion in records. Terry talking about, you know, if you do a diss record, just listen to how Pac sounds on Hit 'Em Up, right? Mm-hmm. Like like how I come on. And first off, I'm
crazy.
Like, he meant that. That's emotion. So
Tupac has a lot of emotional songs.
Yes, he does. So
DMX
is emotional.
Is very emotional in his music.
Facts.
In his skits, in his prayers,
rest
things
in peace,
like that.
DMX.
The problem with Drake is
Everybody views Drake, he's corny.
There you go.
They view him
as soft. You know what I'm saying? So whenever he does anything, it's like, oh, Drake's being emotional. Well, I mean, he's not the only person being emotional. He just does it from a different type of energy that you might not identify with. But at the end of the day, everybody's being
still emotional.
Yeah.
And I think it also comes back to how we equate emotional with what you just said, with being soft a lot of times, too. And in hip hop, like in
general.
Is that
conditioning?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, hip hop is about being hard.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's
it is, those, but it really kind of is.
That's what I'm saying.
What I mean?
That's
conditioning, though.
It's conditioned to be hard. That's why a lot of people be like, I don't like Drake. It's not necessarily that they don't like his music. They don't like his image. You know what I'm saying? But he does make good music, but they don't like the way he responds to certain things.
Right.
So immediately you're just like, ah, this is soft ass emotion. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's what it is.
Because you
have artists that you rock with that make you feel a certain emotion. I mean, Kendrick does it. Scarface, DMX,
mm-hmm.
Jay-Z had a song called Song Cry. Mm-hmm. I make the song cry because I can't see it coming down my eyes.
Yep.
So I gotta make the song cry. You know what I'm saying? So that is emotion at the end of the day.
Well, the thing is, some of the most quote unquote hard rappers, these are people who have the most emotional records. Look, if you're talking about shooting somebody in the face because they stepped on your shoe, what is that? That's emotion that you is going unchecked and is toxic. That's the real toxic masculinity. Well, no, because those two words don't go together. We'll come back to that.
There you go.
But you can't even, when you talk about, like, part of it is because Drake has been emotional about some sucker shit. Sorry.
It's not good. Sorry.
You know, talking about, you know, this girl is going on trips without me, and like, I'm just saying you can do better. That's different.
But that goes into the equation as to why he may be perceived a certain way, because a lot of his content goes down that lane.
But you know, anytime
can y'all acknowledge that?
That's what it is. But just go back to what I kind of said earlier about whenever somebody's talking about shooting somebody for no good reason, that's emotion unchecked.
I can't argue that.
Let's not use the word toxic masculinity. Emotion that's unchecked and unrealistic. Let's use that way. Yeah.
I think it's both.
I can't argue that.
But I would also say I think it's just easy to conflate words sometimes, and in a genre that's literally about words.
Mm.
It's literally about, you know, how we say things and how we get things out.
Right.
We should be a little bit more specific on the vernacular and the vocabulary that we're using when we call somebody emotional. Let's call it what it is. Drake is
a sucker. Let's call it, just say he's a sucker.
You know, like, I think that's like the thing that bothers me as somebody who cares about language in that manner. It's just like, nah, man, like, it matters.
You're literally taught to defend yourself at the end of the day. So if somebody says something about you,
mm-hmm.
in said interview or whatever,
mm-hmm.
are you going to just sit back and not say anything? Because that can be considered emotional, too.
It depends on your emotional maturity.
He doesn't
want to
say anything. So now he's really being soft. So Drake says something, and it's like, oh, I don't like the way he responded.
That's emotional.
Yeah.
But then if he didn't, like you said, if he doesn't say anything, they'd be like, oh, he's a sucker. He didn't say nothing.
Yeah, Drake is unique because...
It's a lot of emotionally stunted people commenting about other people's emotions.
Based off what we're talking about and what we've described, he's very unique because of how his career is going and what he dabbles in. He's got hip hop heads. He's got the songs about the girls. He's got the "She Been Through My Phone," all that. So he's very unique. So in a sense, if we're being honest, he can't win.
No, he can't.
He's winning like a mug.
No, I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about from a perception
in
standpoint.
The public eye.
Of course he winning now. Ain't nobody winning more than him.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, from a perception why he can't win.
No, he can't. And I think you just have to accept that. And I think he has. Yeah. I'm just speaking on it in general. It's just one of those things I see from the outside looking in, and it just annoys me.
Because when you said that, I was like, I got to remember that, because I know there was more to it. There was more to what you would say if you were actually here.
Yeah.
And then he happened to just have a comment. But I understand what y'all saying.
This is why Mike is the king of pop, because Mike was soft as but he was hard at the same time.
And ain't nobody,
bothering. Messing with Mike
at all.
Yeah. Well, couldn't nobody mess with Mike. He had a song called "I'm Bad," and he started out saying, "Your butt is mine."
And nobody said anything.
Nobody said anything to him about that. You know?
I'm just saying, man. I just don't think, I don't know. I see it more so in, we see it in a lot of online spaces, but maybe it's just because I'm in hip hop spaces a lot, especially mm-hmm. online. It's just the comment sections of, just dudes, mm-hmm. grown dudes, and
don't forget the grown part.
You know that they're like in their 40s and 50s.
Some of them,
a lot of them, are soft. That's the problem.
But I don't even see. Here's the thing: I don't even think it's a soft thing, because I don't think there's anything wrong with being soft. I don't think there's anything wrong with being soft.
Charmin.
If you're soft, if you're Charmin, that's cool. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
So embrace your Charmin.
Embrace who you are.
Embrace who you are.
And let people be who they are. And just because you're a hard dude doesn't mean that you're smart. Doesn't mean that you're clever. Doesn't mean you have money.
Doesn't.
And it definitely doesn't mean that you're emotionally smart, because you wouldn't do that. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, people can be soft and people can be, Drake is winning out here.
He winning. I don't care what nobody says.
And
say.
If we're going to put the soft label on there, he's the softest artist that I know right now. And he is winning.
I'm talking about winning.
So all these hard people, shut up.
Because he's winning.
At the end of the day.
He's winning.
Like, I mean, and then we don't usually give Drake praise like that.
Nah.
You know what I'm saying?
But we're fair, though. But
at the end of the day, this that we're talking about, music aside, I mean, because he has hits, he's undeniable.
Yeah.
His responses to people going at him should not be measured any way, shape, or form, in my personal opinion. However he responds is how he responds. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. He's going to continue to be successful.
So what I've learned
from this conversation is
I've been a prisoner to this conditioning as it relates to hip hop after hearing y'all break down the different types of emotion.
You're right? Prisoner to a lot of conditions.
Can I say sometimes one more thing real quick?
Sometimes I am. But don't do that, because you're going to get my blood pressure.
Let me say one more thing.
Go ahead, bro.
One more thing real quick about the Drake is soft comments, because I understand where people come from and I agree to a degree. But what I will say is one thing that most people can't even fathom is the amount of hate and negativity that Drake receives on a daily, hourly, minutely basis that he just accepts and bounces off of him and brings right back out and does whatever he does.
He remains successful.
You can call him soft all you want, but it is not a soft individual that can take all that and continually strive and be living freely out here doing what Drake does all the time.
This episode, y'all have to, Terry made the point. We definitely have Drake's back, because everybody's making great points, first of all. But
it's not even about Drake.
It's not about Drake. But what I'm saying is we're using him as an example.
For sure. For sure.
Across the board, I see how it can be applied. But with him being the example, you're right. What you just said is absolutely right.
Like, I know I'm right.
Now you being emotional.
insensitive at the same time.
But nah,
respect
man.
My opinion,
bro. Yeah. Like,
shout out to Carl Thomas.
The boy went at the end of the day, man. I don't know what that wasn't Carl Thomas. So I know that
it wasn't.
That's definitely not Carl Thomas. That's more Michael Jackson than Carl Thomas. But nah, man, Drake winning. So
he winning at the end of the day. I mean,
he winning,
we can
bro.
Critique his albums as much as we want,
but the boy winning.
He winning. I mean, he has a winning formula that doesn't work for us essentially.
Right.
But as far as him,
that's the most frustrating thing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I tell you what. Sometimes you got to look a man in the face and shake his hand and say,
as a man.
As a man.
I mean, would you consider Prince soft if he didn't have the mustache?
Yes.
But he had a mustache.
I mean, but he claimed that, though. I mean, he was a
androgynous.
Androgynous
male.
But does that make you soft?
No, I just see.
You know
what I mean? I don't think
so. Does that make you soft?
But you know what? See, the thing is, anybody who knew Prince knew he wasn't soft.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. That's what I've always heard.
Look, Michael Jackson went and just bought the Beatles publishing. Under, you know, after talking to
Paul McCartney,
because Paul McCartney probably thought, no, he ain't got money like that.
Mike was like, I'm about to
cop. The business moves that Michael Jackson made when he was alive let you know he wasn't soft.
Boss is. That was Indiana.
True. That's two long. Yes, no. Sorry, three.
Four.
And then, sorry. And then when Eminem started talking crazy to him,
he went out and bought his publishing.
Hey, that's hard.
That's gangster, though. That's gangster.
I mean,
hey.
But isn't soft essentially just not handling business?
Soft is whatever people equate people's emotional responses.
But isn't, like, if we would really break it down, if we're really going to define soft, wouldn't that just be not standing on your business?
Mm-hmm. Essentially, yeah.
I mean, if you want to chop it all the way down, yeah. Yeah, right. Not standing on business. Yeah.
So Mike wasn't soft. Prince
Mike
wasn't
was standing
soft,
on business. Prince was standing
Drake
on business.
And Drake ain't soft.
Yeah, there you go.
And they're all pop stars.
All those rappers that started Amen. And then just stopped rapping, y'all are soft.
Dang, hey, and you know who's
that
really soft? Hurt. If you let somebody push you to an emotion where you wind up creating a violent situation for yourself and you wind up in prison, yep. you're actually the one that's soft.
Jeopardizing your family, soft. Money, and everything else.
So many edits in the last 20 minutes.
Listen, I didn't think we was going to have four on the show. I added one. I didn't realize I added one. It's too late.
All
right, man. I've been swayed on my conditioning. Lone, thank you, brother.
I do what I can.
I appreciate
it. Hey, shout out to L-Brand. I'm still with you on your no more Aubreyism.
Don't get it twisted,
but
bro.
But still, at the end of the day.
Yeah, don't get it twisted.
Yeah. Drake on Drake.
Drake on Drake. And Aubreyism, that's a real thing. Shout out to the homie L-Brand. We not going to cap. But thanks, Lone. I needed that. Maybe I was one of the toxic males. So I appreciate you, bro.
We all have toxicity in us, man.
And Terry talking about it'll make you cry. Like, maybe that's, I was a little toxic. So I got you. I thank you, man. Thank you.
Okay, man. You're welcome. If it's authentic, you're welcome.
It is authentic. All right, man. Anything else y'all want to say before we get out of here?
Booty goons? I don't know.
Booty goons.
Shout out to Ray J.
Ray J had booty goons.
Yeah. Oh.
He did say he was going to get Fab and them at work, didn't he?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Y'all remember that interview on the...
Oh, no, I remember. I don't know if he was...
That's damn near what got the Breakfast Club popping.
Yeah.
I ain't lying. Yeah. We have five Rolls Royce... What'd he say? We have five Rolls Royces outside. I'm with the money team. Come on, man.
That's hilarious.
All right.
That's soft.
Yeah.
I'm playing my piano in my brother's living room. That's my brother. All right, man.
California people's dialect is so funny, man.
Shout out to Southern California.
I have a California story real quick. So when I was younger, I used to frequent California because my grandmother was from California.
Yeah.
So we had went to, me, my brother, and my cousin went to this adjacent neighborhood.
I like adjacent. I like that.
They had the female kind that we wanted to talk to. So these guys that didn't want us around.
Oh, you was talking. You was going to other neighborhoods, talking to, you know.
Yeah, in LA. In LA,
you was talking to Gal.
So, well, Pomona.
Okay, we'll take that.
So these guys, they were real proper about saying they didn't appreciate us being in their neighborhood.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, don't be coming over here talking to our females.
These are our women's.
I didn't pick up on it, right? So I'm just chilling. I'm like, these are all right, women. These dudes, they sound like some pretty cool dudes. You know?
They wasn't.
Hey,
going.
Man. And dude said it just like this. He's like, hey, man, they got to shake the spot. And he said it just like that. I'm from the Midwest. So I don't know what the hell shake the spot means. My cousin cuts out. Mind you, he's from California.
Yeah.
He starts running down the street.
Left you. He left you?
Left me.
Oh.
So I'm like, what was that about? So I start running because he's running. Because
he's running. Just it's an African-American reflex. Just start 100%. Running.
I catch up with him. I'm like, why were you running, man? He is like, man, they should shake the spot, man. You know what that means? I'm like, absolutely not. What does that mean? I'm just here for the female kind, and they were there. And you know what I'm saying? Whatever. He's like, man, that means that they was probably about to do something to us, and they probably had guns. I was like, oh, okay, duly noted. I know how to act.
Thanks,
when I come to California, when someone's talking real proper to me in a gangster way.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, homie, don't be talking to our females.
Yeah. Essentially, that's what it was.
I can't.
Hello, sir. What are you doing?
It didn't pose a threat to me at all. I'm used to people, if they're really mad at me.
To be like, we're about to shoot
in the Midwest, then I know that you're mad at me, right. Versus.
Hey, moral of the story, pay attention to where you at.
Yeah,
and pay attention to your surroundings, because you never know when it's time to shake the spot.
You're going to learn that day. I did learn.
Yeah. At least you ran behind him. That's smart. Yeah.
He cut out, I cut out.
You just stick around and be like, I don't know what he's talking
about.
That
is a black folks reaction, though. Because
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't know the lingo.
I did not know about shaking the spots. I will be leaving.
You know, I said was on Kings of Comedy, like, if Alone got up right now and started running, I'm definitely about to start running.
Yeah, he probably stole that joke.
Probably.
And on that note... NewOldHeads.com for all the education you need this year. If you see it, like it, subscribe, and share to it. Also, check out our Patreon. Don't forget the $100 option where you can hear.
No, we're not doing that.
Never mind.
Yeah, don't get on. Don't
bro
get
said, yeah. Bro said he's still traumatized to this day. We didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, we appreciate the support. Shout out to the chat, everybody that stuck around. We appreciate y'all as always. And we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yeah.
In a minute.
Bye.
Take the spot.